hanging out at the Twisted Oar right here on Lake Lanier Islands, guys. It's Dukes and Bell. Somebody just walk in, we know?
Hey, man. It's Mike Bell and Carl Dukes sent me.
That's awesome.
Drop our name for that imaginary discount.
No doubt. Yeah. I love their shirts, too. The waiters right. and waitresses. They have shirts on that say, we know the owners, too. So I guess that's a phrase that's used quite often here. I know the owners. We know the owners, too.
We've got a lot of great sponsors, and we enjoy our time there. But, man, I really could see us really here on a Thursday or Friday again, you know, in the summer. Really cool. We could drink some beers, and we could stay on a houseboat. Anyway, great time here at the Twisted Oar. Great food, by the way. Full house. Join the party if you're getting off work, whether you're living up here, renting a house up here for the weekend, or get your boat up here. We'll be here till 6.
All right. We got to mention this before we get to our man, Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. We'll talk all things college football with him. Henry Ruggs was denied parole today, Mike, after nearly 5 years.
I thought he was getting out.
I did, too. After killing a woman in a car crash in Las Vegas.
Now, by the way, I'm not rooting for a guy who killed someone to get out early. We just thought he had done everything he was supposed to do by Nevada law as far as when you might get an early out from the prison system.
Yeah, look, he's been very remorseful in this whole ordeal. He was a 2020 first-round pick of the Raiders. And for those who don't remember, he was driving about 150 miles per hour, slammed into a vehicle. It killed a woman and her dog, okay? And Tina Tintor was 23 years old.
Oh.
So he got sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison.
Now, some would have said right there from the jump, Carl, you didn't handle yourself behind the wheel. Someone's life has lost you. That should be allowed 25 years. You know, or more.
Yeah.
I mean, I see both sides of it, you know.
But after 3 years, he would be potentially eligible for parole. And that's kind of where we are. So that came and went. And now it's been 5 years after the incident, and he gets denied parole today. So, Mike, he was, again, saying that there's not a day that I don't think about her or her family or the things that I've done. And the irony to all this is, and we're telling this story just quickly because some people thought he's still very young, that he could get out, you know, come back
and maybe have a career.
Yeah, and maybe still get
but again,
in the NFL.
I mean, look, actions have consequences. I understand. We've talked about it. I mean, it's just you're behind the wheel. You got to make better decisions, you know. And in this case, you know, it's her family probably feels pretty good about. I mean, there's no resolution. She's gone. But either way, it's a heartbreaking story. But you're right. I think there was a perception that somehow he was going to get back in the NFL, at least not anytime soon.
All right, man. It's Dukes and Bell. Let's talk some dogs. Mike Griffith is here from Dog Nation and the AJC.com. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on what everybody's talking about this week in college football, and that is Brandon Sorsby, the quarterback at Texas Tech. I want to know what your opinion is, and then what is the answer to this? Because everybody's acting like it's not that big of a deal. Mike and I have been saying all week, it's a huge deal if this kid is allowed to play.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, facets to this. I mean, first and foremost, if he plays, it shows that the NCAA doesn't have any enforcement over anything, even, like you said, it's the most serious rule, which, you know, puts the integrity of the game on the line. And I don't know of another sport on the planet where somebody acknowledges gambling, especially on their own team, that they're allowed to play. And I, of all sports and athletics, you think collegiate athletics would have the highest standard in. You know, they do have a zero tolerance policy, but if they can't enforce it, but what's even more amazing is the courtrooms in Texas and that there's people making a case for this, that there's
right.
an academic institution in Texas Tech that's trying to make a case for this and trying to equate it to, you know, other, you know, kids that have had, you know, domestic issues or, you know, drug issues or other issues that are, you know, you can rehabilitate for young people. Without the differences, not at the expense of the entire integrity of the game. That's what seems to be missing here. And the fact that there's judges, I mean, I guess we've all heard that, you know, not all judges are created equally, but boy, if
right.
this isn't a microcosm of our society being broken, I don't know what is.
Mike, I'm with you. I said to Carl the other day, it's like, what color is the sky in our world, man? I mean, you'd think there'd be some adults in the room and the next appellate, again, if the NCAA, which is they are appealing, the next group is the 7th Appellate Court of Texas. All 4 judges who may hear the court are Case, I should say, are all Texas Tech alumni. It's like, when does an adult say, no, you broke the cardinal rule of football? You actually did bet against your team. On one occasion, he bet against, he bet unders on passing yards, and he bet under on total points, you know, when it came to Indiana. And that's, in essence, betting against your team. And by the way, they've glossed over the fact that he's in recovery. Maybe he needs a year to get his head right.
Yeah.
It's almost like, look, we spent $5 million on this guy, and by God, we're getting him on the field, and circumstances be damned.
Well, and, you know, and at the root of it, you've got a $25 billion booster on the strings that used to get in his way in this world. And, you know, threatening to sue anybody that gets in his way. I mean, even if the Big 12, which, you know, they're a member school of that conference, even if the Big 12 rules against him, they say they're going to sue them too. So, I mean, this is as close to the need for an SMU death penalty as I've seen since, you know, SMU got put out of business. And that's, I kind of feel like that's where Texas Tech is headed right now. Now, the question is there any courtroom that has enough power where if the NCAA and the other schools were to say, no, we're not playing, is there a courtroom that can make that happen? I mean, how much power does a local state judge have to control all the collegiate football world?
It's a great point. It's Mike Griffith from Dog Nation, guys. AJC.com, as we are live at the Twisted Oar here on Dukes and Bell. What about the stance that Josh Brooks has taken, the AD at Georgia, who says, we're not scheduling anybody from Tech?
Well, it's historic, you know, because it's unprecedented. You know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And, you know, the fact that Josh was willing to be out there first, you know, talking to Tom Mars the other night about it, and, boy, Tom couldn't have been stronger. So, boy, this is what leadership looks like, you know, when somebody's willing to put themselves out there and, you know, really, you know, not easy to go against a $25 billion booster like Cody Campbell with that kind of power, knowing, and sure enough, he immediately took a pot shot at Georgia,
right,
on social media, which tells you everything you need to know about, you know, that guy's mentality. It's incredible. And this is what happens when the boosters have too much power, but this is where we're at because money is such a big part of the game. And now, you know, donations and NIL, is where the leverage and the power is at for all these schools, and so they have to answer to them. You know, my question is there anybody at Texas Tech that's, you know, feeling a little guilty and feeling a little bad and feeling a little bit ashamed of,
right,
of how their school is being portrayed and what this means to the whole Texas Tech name? I mean, it's one thing to be aggressive paying for players and trying to rebuild programs, but I think we can all appreciate that. But to do it by crossing, you know, this line of gambling and you know, trying to override an NCAA ban on, you know, something that's been consistent. It's not like, you know, this is an independent case. I mean, I personally know of schools that have had guys that have gambled on their own team. They're just gone. Like, they didn't fight it. They didn't try to go to court over it. They understood, hey, we're a member institution. These are the rules. So it's really, again, it's really, it just shows you how out of whack everything is. In a way, it's good. In a way, it's good that this is happening because it really crystallizes,
right, you know, how broken,
you know, how broken it is, and the need for some changes.
Yeah, Mike Griffith joins us, guys, from Dog Nation here on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline, live from Twisted Oars on the lake here at Lake Lanier. Mike, we were talking about it. Imagine if Georgia, because the perception is always, oh, the SEC, the college football factories. Nobody who's a booster at Georgia said, hey, let's find a lawyer somewhere in Georgia and let's get an injunction to stop Todd Gurley from being suspended, right? Or, you know, or A.J. Green when he celebrated the end zone. That was a bad call. Let's get an injunction against his suspension. Because there's common sense. There is no common sense. I mean, again, from government to politics, you said it. The world is off its rocker, and there's like there is no one to stop it unless, tell me about the College Football Playoff Committee. Could they have any say, or they just turn around and sue them if they said that Texas Tech's ineligible?
Yeah, this is like, you know, Iran blocking the Strait of Hormuz, right? Trying to get to, it kind of is. It's kind of like, everybody's going to play by our rules, right? Yeah, you wonder if the College Football Playoff Committee can do something about it because they're not governed by the NCAA, but I suppose they would be subject to a lawsuit too. And again, depending on where the lawsuit's filed, obviously if you file it in Lubbock, Texas, good luck, or And just because the appeals court had a four, Texas Tech law graduates, doesn't necessarily mean they would rule in favor of Texas Tech. The biggest problem is that appeal wouldn't be heard until after the season.
Right.
So
right.
Basically, you're counting on Texas Tech doing the quote-unquote right thing. And if their biggest booster is behind, basically the guy that's brought him back to prominence with his money, does Texas Tech really have a choice? Can they really walk away from that kind of money and that kind of representation, or are they too far gone now?
Mike, Rook, just a sidebar. I don't know. I'm asking because I don't know the answer. Could the NCAA, which is based in Indianapolis, find a courtroom in Indiana and supersede? We'll have a matching injunction? Say, we're the ruling body of this sport. I don't know what the precedent would be. I'm grasping at straws here.
Well, no, and, there's something to be said about that, too. Even if they were to get congressional oversight and be granted antitrust, that antitrust only applies at the federal level. And because these are unincorporated conferences, unincorporated NCAA, public schools are subject to, state-level court, not federal. So even if you were to get antitrust protection, you would need that to be at the federal level. And these are all cases that can be heard at the state level, and I don't think they're subject, to federal rules. So even if Congress were to step in, that doesn't necessarily solve it.
Mike, give us your thoughts on the Dogs in the College World Series, man. Where are you at here? Because I think this is their best opportunity to capture it all.
Oh, for sure. And, obviously they got a tough draw. They're playing the Texas team. A Texas program that's been to the World Series 39 times. Nobody else has been more than 25, and they're going up against a great pitcher that may be the number one pick in the draft. So, tough draw out of the gate, but, you're able to survive and win Saturday night. I think that, the kids are greased, and, Georgia's the betting favorite. I believe they're the highest remaining seed left in the tournament, so they're playing really well. They're healthy. They're confident. I think Georgia's in a really good place, but, there's no guarantee. Another tournament. Every tournament's a little bit different. The regional, the super regional, it's another weekend, and goodness knows if anybody knows how things can change in the playoffs, it's folks in Atlanta after all these years of the Braves.
Yep.
You ain't lying. Hope you enjoyed your vacation. Glad to have you back on, man, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll know a lot more about this. We're talking about the College World Series with the Dogs. And by the way, you can hear those games right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we're covering all of those games for you. So make sure you tune in. All right, man. Thank you so much, Mike Griffith. We appreciate you, brother.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Mike Griffith, DogNationAJC.com. Mike, when we come back, though, we got to talk to our buddy Mark Raimondi.
Yeah, man. We have a developing story, as Carl likes to say. The Falcons making some roster moves. Not sure what it means for the right tackle position, or maybe it's more about a guy who apparently now is on the PUP list. The depth chart takes a hit with the Falcons in the middle of OTAs.
Do your head like this. Just like this. It's Dukes and Bell. We're at Twisted Ore. Just ran into Brody, Mike. Brody's a dog. Just graduated. His dad, who's sitting back there by one of our big signs.
He's a good American right there.
Yeah, says 92.9 The Game. Him and his dad are up here, but he said, man, I've called into you guys numerous times. He said, the day you guys broke that news about Tua, I was on my way back from Tifton.
Got a girlfriend in Tifton. apparently, his girlfriend's by the Big Peanut.
So he was like, man, I'm driving all the way up listening to you guys. We appreciate it. Brody, man, good kid. He's got a bright future, so thanks for being out here.
It's funny, Carl. I'm 58 this summer. When do you retire? As long as we stay number one, I guess we don't have to. But talking to some guys that are on the cusp here at the bar.
Yeah.
But appreciate you guys listening to 92.9 The Game.
Thank you, sir.
Listen to Andy Randy Steakhouse, The Morning Shift. And speaking of the station, we're the flagship of your Atlanta Falcons. And today we had some developing stories.
Yeah, we did. Mark Raimondi's here from ESPN. He covers the team on a daily basis. Friend of the show. And Mark, we start with this news of trading for an offensive lineman. Can you fill our listeners in on what's behind this and what's going on up there with the O-line?
Well, just a few minutes ago, guys, I'm sure that you've seen the Falcons place Storm Norton, offensive tackle, on the reserve/physically unable to perform list. So he is going to be out now, as he was for all of last season after ankle surgery. So that was definitely one of the things that necessitated that move to acquire Wanye Morris from Kansas City. You know, a guy who started 16 games for the Chiefs at both tackle positions over the last three seasons. So they need, again, you know, for the second straight, I guess, you know, off-season summer, they need depth at tackle, especially right tackle. And that's what they look to do. Hmm. And, you know, I guess he's going to be competing with, you know, Juwan Taylor, who's still banged up from last season. He's not fully back. He's not been practicing a lot. So Michael Jarrell has been the guy getting most of the reps for the first team right now at right tackle. Of course, you know, there's still some other guys, the rookie Jack, was rookie last year, Jack Nelson. But right. It looks like it's going to be a several man competition right now for that spot.
We were talking about Juwan Taylor and, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, his fall from grace, from being considered one of the part of the best offensive lines, and a bigger picture problem with the Kansas City Chiefs the last couple of years, you know, getting away from the better version of a Yips, right, and the false starts. So in your mind right now, Mark, who's our starting, you know, right tackle blindside week one?
Yeah, I mean, that is a great question. I don't know. Maybe it ends up being Morris. It's really hard to say. It seems like he was going to be the odd man out in Kansas City, you know, from what they've been saying over there. But right now, I would say it's up in the air. I really don't know who it might be.
Wow.
Certainly still could be Taylor. You know, still could be Juwan Taylor. It's not going to be Storm Norton. You know, we know that for now. But that's, you know, Caleb McGarry retires, and people had a lot of bad things to say about Caleb McGarry over the last several seasons. And boy, you know, the grass is not always greener, gentlemen.
Right. Be careful what you wish for.
No, it's true. Mark Raimondi joining us here on Dukes and Bell as we talk all things Falcons. Next week, mandatory minicamp. James Pierce Jr. is going to be there, right? He's going to be there, right?
I don't know if James Pierce Sr. is going to be there. I'm not sure about James Pierce Jr. either, Carl. I'm not sure if junior, senior, the third, the fourth. I'm not sure. But that is one of the big questions. That's one of the big stories, I would say, going into this minicamp. Will he be there or not? And whose decision would that be? I feel like it would probably be the team's decision if he's not there, because they probably don't know what the NFL is going to do. They don't know what they're going to do. But from a legal standpoint, guys,
he can be there.
He's in a pretty decent spot right now.
Right,
if
bring
he
it.
Stays out of trouble for a year. You know, doesn't fail any drug tests. Doesn't get arrested. Doesn't violate anything. Stays away from Rekia Jackson, his ex-girlfriend. He's going to get those charges dismissed. So right now, from a legal perspective, he has a pass. Whether or not, you know, he's going to start the season, you know, if he's going to get suspended, he probably will. I don't know for how many games, but that is now the question. The legal thing is, we know, now we got to figure out what the NFL and what the Falcons are going to do.
Talking to our man Mark Raimondi, guys, from ESPN.com. He's a hell of a man, Carl, and a hell of a wrestler. Joins us here on the Sweet James Accident Attorneys Hotline, live from a great spot, by the way, at the Twisted Oar in Lake Lanier. So getting back to the big picture here, I mean, we've always felt that, you know, the NFL moves at a glacial pace, and you really can't use the Rashee Rice situation because it's apples to oranges. Mm-hmm. But if the Falcons, I mean, do you think the Falcons know what the NFL is going to do? Because we're of the opinion.
I don't believe they do.
Okay, so then let's force the NFL's hand and bring Pierce Jr. in. I know the state of Florida upgraded what the local jurisdiction did from a 6-month to a year probation period.
Correct.
But if he's keeping his nose clean, why can't he work?
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. I get the feeling that at some point they're going to have to do that, right? They're going to have to just say, you know what, like, and it may not be next week, guys. It might be training camp, right? You know,
right.
At that point, there is an official 90-man roster at that point, and he has the right to be, you know, to be there if they're going to continue with that. They could put him on the commissioner's exempt list. That's possible, but as of right now, is there really a reason to do that? I'm sure they've done their investigations. I'm sure they've seen all the video. I mean, I can't imagine they haven't by now, right? It's been months. You know, this is February we're talking about here. So
right.
I'm not sure when the decision might come down, but maybe it will be before training camp.
All right, Mark. We got some pretty forthcoming stuff from quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt. What's your take on some of the things that he said in regards to footwork and the things that they're working on and how he sees this between Tua and Michael Penix?
Well, the most interesting thing that he said, and maybe it wasn't, maybe it shouldn't have been as interesting as we took it, but he said right now there is no competition right now between, you know, Tagovailoa and Penix, because how could there be? Penix can't even do 11-on-11. You know, he can't do the same thing. So how can you adequately evaluate both guys if they're not even able to do the same thing? So that's understandable, right? You know, they're right now, you can't really look at it as a competition. But what does that mean? If it's not a competition, does that mean it's Tua's job right now? Is he the number one? You know, is there no number one right now at this point in time? You know, how do you interpret that? That's the question. And then the footwork stuff is something that, you know, Kevin Stefanski has said a few times also over the last few months about that being kind of a foundation of what he likes to do with quarterbacks, is kind of get their feet in order. And that is something that Alex Van Pelt is, I guess, working with those guys on a lot. And honestly, you know, for a guy like Penix, not the worst thing to work on, because there have been mechanical lapses, I would say. Is that fair? With some of the stuff that we've seen from him over the last, you know, three seasons, where, you know, there have certainly been times and plays where it does not look like he has the right. I mean, and you know, this is the NFL, things do happen, but it does look like at times he's out of position, or his legs are not right, they're not under him. You know, he's not moving the right way, or what have you. So getting back to basics, I guess, right now.
Are you saying you don't believe in Penix?
Why are you putting words in my mouth?
I want to see you get triggered and get all the hate mail that I get every day.
You know what, Mark? I'm not going to do that. Mark does a great job. Let me say this. He does a great job of non-biased coverage.
Fair and balanced.
Of giving you the information. But I will say, there will be people who hear you say that, and they will call us or text us, and they will say that. They will be like, okay, well, if he's got to go back and do all this work, then, and that becomes the big question. I know you're just giving us the facts, but it is an interesting tidbit there about where Penix is.
But this is not just Penix, guys. I mean, they're not talking about Penix just doing these drills with footwork. They're talking about both guys.
And
we didn't watch Tua every day the way we have Penix the last few years, right? So we don't know. We don't necessarily know intimately the stuff that he has to work on. But a guy that threw as many interceptions as he did last year, he probably needs to work on some of that footwork stuff too. So, you know, who's to say that they're both not getting stuff out of this, you know, going back to the basics?
Let's get Mark Raimondi to trigger the audience some more, Carl.
What are you going to ask him now?
I mean, I can trigger the audience if you want. I mean, I don't know. The Knicks had a pretty big comeback
last
night.
No, Mark.
Here you go.
My dad's up in heaven with Dave DeBush here. They're drinking shots right now. But we're talking about the Falcons, Mark. Please focus. Now, where we are, I thought last season, if you had to talk about, like, Michael Penix Jr., I thought it was good, bad, and ugly. And it was more bad and ugly than good. But it's also two things can be true. The franchise did not help him with Zach Robinson, you know, with the way that the offense was designed. Now, does he take a leap this year under Kevin Stefanski? Or is it still come down to you're coming off an injury and Falcon fans should temper their expectations because Tua's got the high ground in this battle?
Well, I would also say that, talking about the situation, I mean, Penix, Darnell Mooney was never right all season last year, right?
His correct.
Number two wide receiver.
Drake was hurt.
Got released very early in the season, and he was working with, you know, the David Stills of the world and the Dylan Drummonds of the world.
Casey,
you know,
Washington.
After Drake London. Casey Washington, who by the way, was a healthy scratch the last half of the season. You know, that was a wide receiver room that was really, you know, not very deep and really, frankly, not very good last year. So you have to give him, you know, a little bit of leeway there. But one thing that I've always said, guys, is there was a distinct change to me in Michael Penix last year compared to when he started the last games of 2024. I thought in 2024 he was playing loose, he was playing free, he was playing the way that he knows how to play. And then something changed last season where either he was pressing or whatever, but man, he made some throws at the end of 2024 that you were like, okay, this could be the guy, because you remember that throw to the sidelines to Kadarrell Hodge late in the season? I mean, my goodness, like I'm talking, I mean, and he was not making throws like that last season. For some reason, something changed, whether it was the offense or the lack of weapons or what it was, but something changed. He was not the same guy. Maybe he was banged up. You know, maybe there were some you know, there were some injuries even before the ACL, but he was not, right. He did not appear to be the same quarterback as he was.
Mark Grimondi from ESPN wrapping things up here, guys, on the Sweet James Accident Attorney Hotline. Mark, my thing is, like, I always use the Berlin game as kind of a like the nutshell of the Falcons season. Kyle Pitts drops a touchdown pass on the first drive. Conversely, later in the game, there's a blitz, and Michael Penix has diagnosed the play, called an audible, which Pitts has missed. How much do you expect Pitts to really get coached up, or more of a sense of urgency or accountability he didn't have under the previous regime, under Stefanski and co?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. It is the same position coach. It's Kevin Coger, a tight end, which is I think he's a good coach, and he's a guy that has gotten some offensive coordinator look
mentions, right?
Yes. But Kevin Stefanski is a guy. He was a tight end coach. And if you look at his career historically, he has featured tight ends in his offenses pretty highly. And you look at David Njoku and what he did in Cleveland, right? So I think that they're really, really going to make sure that Kyle Pitts is a major part of this offense, which, you know, as we know, so far in his career, there have been games and months where Kyle Pitts has disappeared. And we're not seeing Kyle Pitts on the stat sheet, you know, and we're not seeing him on the field making plays. And sometimes that changes, and he can make plays in bunches, right? Which happened toward the end of last season when he was kind of the featured guy with London out and a pretty poor wide receiver room. So I think you have to hope. You have to hope. But again, you know, fans have done a lot of hoping with Kyle Pitts. So it still feels like we don't know. And I think that's why they're hesitating about giving him a long term contract. I think they want to see this season. Hey, can you do it 2 years in a row? Can you
prove it
2 years in a row? Okay, well then you're our guy. But if you can't, we might have to make some other, you know, make some hard decisions.
Totally agree. Since you're my guy, before we let you get out of here, go ahead and gloat, man. Where were you last night as the Knicks won that game? Were you at the house? Were you watching it? Were you watching with somebody?
I gotta be honest. My wife was. She went to bed early. She's on the radio. She's on Spanish radio here in Georgia.
Yes, La Raza, sí, señor.
Yeah, she's your competitor, your rival. So she has to be in bed early. She's in morning drive. So I'm just sitting there watching it myself, texting my dad. You know, because we, you know, when I was a kid, my dad remembers the 70s Knicks. You know, he was a big Knicks fan in the 70s when they won the last time they won. And just sitting there, and me and him have been texting these whole playoffs. Every game we're texting. And then I think second quarter, I was like, I got to take a little bit of break from this game because
it was over.
It's ugly. I don't know how the Spurs, they were not missing a three-pointer. I mean, it was like they were just chucking it from the logo and it would go in every time. And it was like, I can't stand to watch this anymore. I'm starting to lose it a little bit. So took out my laptop, my phone, messing around, you know, half watching the game. And then the third quarter, you know, I texted my dad. I was like, if they can just get it to 15 points or less at the end of the third quarter, they have a shot. It's manageable. That's what I texted him. And he was like, you're right. And they ended up getting it to 15 points at the end of the third quarter. And then I knew that there was a chance. Just because this team historically, I mean, this team, this season, this playoff, they come back. You know, they have come back. They are incredibly resilient. And you need a little help from the other guys, too. The Spurs played pretty terrible in the second half, right? They made some incredibly boneheaded moves. You know, everything that was going right for them in the first half went the opposite in the second half. And the Knicks won in the greatest comeback in the history of the NBA Finals. And,
oof.
I mean, when Ananobi hit, when he tipped it in, I was losing my mind just here alone in my apartment watching the game. It was incredible.
Great stuff. Mark, I'll tell you this. Cherish that time with Pops, man.
Right on.
I miss texting Dad and doing that same thing. So that's amazing,
it's been,
man.
It's been the best, guys. It's been the best part of these playoffs for me.
It is.
It's connecting with my dad. And my dad lives in Fort Myers, Florida. And I'm going down there next week. And if it goes to Game 7, which, hey, I hope it doesn't. I hope the Knicks take care of it before Game 7. But if it goes to Game 7... I'll be able to watch with my dad in person in Fort Myers. So that'll be a nice consolation, too. As long as the Knicks win, that's all I'm saying.
That's right awesome. Mark, take care, man. Mark Grimondi, ESPN, moves by the Falcons today. If you missed it, going out and acquiring another offensive tackle. We'll hit more on this in the Falcon Report. Mark, thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
All right, man. What do we have coming up in Guy Talk, Mike?
What don't we have, Carl? We're hanging out here at the Twisted Oar on Lake Lanier. Make some noise, studio audience. I said make some noise, studio audience. There we go. There we go. Good time, fun time. Stop serving the radio host alcohol. But enough about Day-Day. We'll come back, Carl. We've got some stuff in Guy Talk. The memes. There's a million memes. Maybe the Falcons are off the hook for the choke of Super Bowl 51. Or not. That work in the crowd, saying hi to our listeners, Oren, back at the ranch in Midtown. We're live here at Twisted Oar on Lake Lanier Highlands. What a scene, Carl. We got a, by the way, studio audience, make some noise. Is the speaker on, G? Oh, there we go. Great crowd, great scene. And by the way, now we have dueling babies. Who's got the cuter baby? Now that's a cute baby right there. And that's a cute baby. And I hate kids, but I got to be honest, these are some great-looking kids, and they're very responsive.
Yeah, I've connected with this gentleman right here.
I know he's waving.
What's his name? What's the name?
George.
George. Oh, that's a good name. That's a perfect name.
Very Anglican. Very Anglican.
I have connected with George. George is looking at me. We were making goo-goo faces at each other a little bit earlier. So George and I, we were on the same page. What's the baby's name over here?
What's the baby over here? Olivia. Oh, my God. If George and Olivia get together, you know, we got royalty.
There we go.
I don't know what's going on there. You'll be the prince of Lake Lanier Islands, I guess. Speaking of Olivia, Olivia Benson, Mariska Hargitay. Did you ever watch the Mariska Hargitay documentary on HBO?
I did not.
You know, I'll tell you what. Guys or girls listening to our show, 80% are men, 20% are women. This one will tug at your heartstrings. Mariska Hargitay, who's on Law & Order, SVU. Her mother, you know who her mom was? She was a unbelievable knockout, Jane Mansfield.
Oh, I know who Jane
in the
'50s. I didn't know
and
that was
her
mom.
And she was married to Mickey Hargitay, who was a Hungarian Mr. Universe. And this documentary, basically, she's trying to establish who was her dad, because, dare I say, her mom had some fun.
Okay.
But it's a fascinating documentary, and if you like, and all I know is, if the Braves aren't on, right, and there's no Ranger game, because I got the NHL, you know, ticket, center ice, I'm watching Law & Order SVU with my wife, like probably three nights a week or whatever it is. And Mariska Hargitay brings it back to the Knicks, has her season tickets, or maybe she gets them for free. We'll talk about that in a second. She's sitting right next down to what's her face? Kelsey's.
Oh, brain dead. Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift.
And I apologize to the Swifties out there. I don't listen to her music.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Taylor Swift and her three girlfriends are sitting right next to Mariska Hargitay and her son, courtside at the Garden.
Yeah, it was a big deal last night, man. It was a who's who in game three, but game four, you know, they're panning around and you're just, you know, you're seeing star after star, and Mike, that added to it. But look, it was funny because I saw some message today or some text or something where they said this thing didn't get started till after Wu-Tang Clan performed.
And that's it.
Yeah, they said Mike had the flu game, Knicks had the Wu game.
And if you listen to yesterday's show, live thanks to everyone who showed up at Buffalo's, up in Hiram, the other end of basically the compass. We had a great time yesterday over there. And you and I told you in Guy Talk, I said Wu-Tang Clan was going to perform at halftime. And they really did provide some kind of a spark. That and Mitch Johnson, the Spurs coach, decided, let's just be stupid and chuck threes 10 minutes into the 24-second clock and watch our lead erode and get the crowd back into it. Everyone is saying, and the memes are out there. I showed Carl during the commercial break. Somebody took the Falcons logo and attached a spur to it. And it's going viral now.
Yeah, it's, well, look.
It, because we are the,
for all the guys, wrong reasons.
For better or for worse.
We've heard that before.
For better or for worse, everybody listening, everyone hanging out here at the bar, we are the biggest losers in the history of the NFL. We blew a 28-3 lead. It happened, and we can't ever take it away until we ever get back to the mountain and win it. But now, folks are taking our bad juju and comparing it to how the Spurs blew it last night.
It was bad. It was definitely bad, as more listeners are coming in. Good to see familiar faces coming in here to the Twisted Oar. But, yeah, man, look, you can't downplay this. Whether the Spurs come back and win game five, it really doesn't matter. When the series is over, and I still think the Knicks are going to win, it's hard to beat any team three times in a row in the NBA. So that's what they're up against, and history's not on their side.
Right.
But the commentary, Mike, and the history of this will be exactly what you're talking about. You blew a 30-point lead. That's basically what this comes down to. 29 points, 30-point
right.
lead. And you had the series. You could have changed momentum. You could have went back home, tied 2-2. Who knows where this goes? But once it's over and the Knicks win, that's what everybody's going to be remembering.
Hey, guys, we were watching last night, and I'm going to be honest with you. I got a couple of guys. I told Carl earlier, because I get it. I've been in Atlanta since 98, and sometimes people don't want to hear, you know, you're not Atlanta. Can't help where you were born. If I had known I was going to do talk radio, I would have told Dad, hey, maybe I'll get my grades up, try to go for Georgia. Now, I still wouldn't have gotten in. But growing up as a kid, my father lived for the Knicks. I'm adopted. My dad was 6'4", played high school and college basketball. Great guy. Dave DeBuscher used to come in my bar. And Dave DeBuscher and my dad became best friends. Now, for guys who don't know, Dave DeBuscher was the Knicks general manager who famously in 1985 gets the alleged frozen envelope in the old lottery. And so Dave comes in the bar and he sees my dad. He goes, you're the guy on TV. Because whenever it's a high-profile crime case, you see my dad on television. And Dave DeBuscher and my dad became boys. So I'd like to think, Carl, just spare my New Yorkness for a second, that up in heaven they were enjoying it. Maybe your dad was there, too, having a shot with him.
Look, your fandom is your fandom. And how we're raised and the teams we come up on doesn't change when you move somewhere else.
Right.
And nor should it. But what we have said is if most of us who are from somewhere else and you come to Atlanta, you have to adopt the Atlanta teams because you live here.
Correct.
You're involved in this community, and we want to see the best for our city. But at the end of the day, we know this. There are tons of transplants here, Mike, and they bring their teams with them, and there's nothing wrong with that. So when you have this rare, unique situation,
right.
53 years.
Right.
It's okay to say, man, you know what? That's what I went and watched as a kid. And I'm rooting for those guys because that's incredible to see because my family watched that.
Right. And again, my dad missed out on the Rangers winning and beating the 54-year curse. He was long gone before that. So everyone has, you know, their cross to bear as their sports fandom.
It's
what we said earlier. You stick with it you roll with the Hawks. You roll with the Falcons, the Braves, and hopefully get some hockey back at some point. But last night, everyone's going bananas about the celebrities. Jerry Seinfeld. Have you seen the memes?
No.
They put a poofy shirt.
Oh, yeah.
For those who never watched Seinfeld, famous episode of Jerry wearing a poofy shirt on a date, they've now superimposed that. I love Larry David. Now, Day-Day, have you ever watched Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
I mean, to see Larry. And by the way, Larry, can't you put an effort to wear a Knicks hat for crying out loud?
He doesn't care.
He won't do it.
Did you guys see the video? I think Oren put it in our chat. Where Josh Hart misses the layup.
Yes.
Larry, like, almost
when Josh Hart botches the putback, the layup, Larry David's like, that's it, we lost, it's over.
Yeah, yeah. It felt that way. I mean, he was about to be the GOAT. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he really was about to be the guy that everybody blamed if, in fact,
they lost the game.
Because he missed the bunny.
But what everybody's talking about today, and we'll talk more about it in the 5 o'clock hour also, more on from the Braves' very bad trip to the south side of Chicago with Grant McCauley coming up. But last night, it was just an electric atmosphere, one of those things you'll talk about. The big question is, how do the Spurs bounce back? Meanwhile, the Spurs, while they get out of their hotel, Carl, and they're all they want to do is get out of their hotel, get their bags, and go home. Somebody throws an egg and hits Wembanyama in the head.
I saw that, man. And look, you already won the game.
It goes back to what we talked about. There's no way to apologize for it. I don't think we do that in Atlanta. We don't do that here. Maybe in Philly. Now, I will say this. It is a bit revisionist history. When I had a guy from Philly get, you know, you were talking ish about the Philadelphia fans. Well, I've experienced it my entire adult life and my childhood. But he also said, if you read the Jeff Perlman book, which they documented in Winning Time on the Lakers, the Boston Celtics fans were throwing eggs, beer, and even throwing up on the bus.
Yeah.
When the Celtics were beating the Lakers, they're leaving Boston Garden.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. The second year when the Lakers beat the Celtics.
Mike, I think a lot of this stuff was not documented as much, obviously in the 70s and 80s.
There's nobody with a camera phone to see a Boston Celtics fan throwing a full-loading beer at Magic Johnson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, and that's the difference. Now we see all this stuff. But, yeah, man, it's classless. And I hate to see it, especially after an incredible win last night, where you should have just been in such a joyous mood to celebrate and not want to throw eggs at
Wimba. And by the way, the guy that threw the egg with perfect accuracy that hit Wembanyama in the head.
He did.
If you would, Wembanyama is facing you up mano a mano, you'd be crapping your pants.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be running like a dog.
No, you wouldn't do that. We always say that. Half the stuff these guys do, they're cowards, and you wouldn't do that to anybody's face.
That's it. Hey, but on the positive side, we're live. Look at this crowd. It's baby versus baby. Who's got the coolest baby today here at the Twisted Oar on Lake Lanier? Only there can be only one, Carl. We're hanging out the final hour of the show, brought to you by Mick Ultra. And let's give it up for, or not, Mexico El Trey up 2-0 on South Africa.
Yeah, man. How much time? 89th minute? I can't
see.
Yeah,
it's almost over.
All right.
But Mexico down there. It's a World Cup viewing party. Thanks to Mick Ultra. They paid for these shenanigans today, Carl.
They did. I love Baby George has been on that bottle, man, for about 5-10 minutes right now. I mean, he's killing it.
Is that got Bailey's in that thing? What's in that bottle?
It might be Bailey's. All right, we're coming back. We got plenty more to dive into. Falcon Report, they make a move today. They make a trade, as a matter of fact. We'll talk to Grant about the Braves. Want to remind you, speaking of World Cup, the U.S. men's national team begins their biggest soccer event ever. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game wants you to be a part of it with our match day parties brought to you by Michelob Ultra, guys. We're going to be at Jimmy's Tequila tomorrow on Peachtree Industrial right there in Doraville. Get ready for the match and then join Jason Longshore from 6 to 8 and Chris Thomas from 8 to 11 at Mazzy Sports Bar and Grill in Duluth. Both locations. Michelob Ultra is giving you a chance to win tickets to an upcoming match in Atlanta. It's all brought to you by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. That's all tomorrow with Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.